The year is 2006. I'm Zach.
I'm Charlotte.
And this is My Marvelous Year. Here, the comic book reading club, where we go through the best of Marvel comics from its origins to today. I'm Zach, your comic book master, and I'm joined today by...
That's doubtful, but keep going.
I don't think so. I think everyone agrees. I think it's very... well, you know what, Charlotte? I strive to be civil this episode, so I respectfully disagree, but I really appreciate your feedback.
And I strive to be war. So we'll see how that goes.
I strive, and if Dave was here, he would strive to be Road 2. Let us walk all over him.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was really good. That was a really good joke.
Yeah, great intro.
Yeah, so it's this episode, I'm going to be extremely polite. I'm going to try not to be rude or disagree, verbally assault my co-host like I usually do. Because it is, yeah, I'm embodying the civil part. And Charlotte, you're going to be so rude on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely, you f***ing asshole.
Excuse me.
I forgot we weren't on extra issues and I can't swear.
I don't even, you know, it's funny. I swear a lot in my everyday life, but on the podcast, it's very easy for me to shift off on extra issues.
Extra
it's
usually issues.
Like,
excuse me.
A choice. But, yeah, so we are at the end of 2006. We've got two episodes over Civil War. We did talk about, like, why they were split up. You know, like, Dave wanted them split in two because there's not that many issues for both. I think there's about seven issues in each one. But I think it makes sense. Having read this, I was like, this is, like, a nice setup. I feel like I got, you know, like, maybe we'll talk about kind of all the ideas surrounding Civil War. And then, you know, the event itself will be a little more... fleshed out because there's so many more tie-ins and stuff, but I think it made sense to kind of peel these apart. So it's a bunch of Spider-Man issues, some Fantastic Four, and the New Avengers Illuminati. We can finally just say that word without feeling like we're spoiling anything. Issues, you can find them in the show notes as always. You also can find the big plan for everything we're going to read in the Patreon spreadsheet. It's $1 a month if you want to support us over on patreon.com/mymarvelousyear. Over there, you can also get access to our Slack for $5 a month. $5 a month also gets you 6 months early access to Extra Issues, the comic book show podcast that Charlotte and I do on the side. It's a monthly show where we do non-superhero comics generally. And right now on the Patreon feed, we're starting a 6 month series covering a bunch of Sandman and Lucifer. So very excited about that. We just recorded our first episode. So come check it out. Charlotte, have you read Civil War before? It's such a big event.
I have, and I think I'd actually read these issues before. Maybe not the Fantastic Four ones, but for sure New Avengers and Spider-Man. I read Civil War when I was getting into comics as a teenager. And I don't know if it's collected the same way in the States. Here, the way Civil War is collected is it's, I think, seven volumes. Maybe eight volumes.
And wait, like volumes or issues?
No, volumes. Oh, so, okay. Like, the whole event, you have a prelude volume, which I think has these issues in it. It's probably the Road to Civil War thing. Mm-hmm. And then... book one is the actual seven issue events, and then book two through seven are like all the tie-ins. So I think like the book two is like Wolverine, X-Men tie-in, stuff like that. Book three is maybe, I don't know, Fantastic Four, Avengers tie-ins. And I think I'd read, so back then I didn't know how like superhero events worked. So I thought like, oh, I guess this is like seven continuous books of like one story that it keeps going through, and I was hella confused when I got to the end of like book one and then picked up book two and was like, oh, this is back to the beginning but with Wolverine. Uh-huh. Oh, and then this is back to the beginning but with the X-Men. Yeah, I didn't get how tie-ins worked. So yeah, I think I've read the main two events. I think the prelude like wrote two issues. And then I read the Wolverine tie-ins, and I think I stopped after the Wolverine tie-ins because I was confused about what was going on.
Good job, Marvel.
Yeah, that's my experience with Civil War.
Yeah, that's... I mean, here, I think there's like 5 tie-in books, and they're divided up by the hero.
Yeah.
It's like the first book, and then you have the Road to, and then you've got Civil War, and then you've got like Civil War Captain America. That's all the issues of Captain America that are tied in. But I guess we'll probably get into that. Like, I don't know how many issues there are, but it's a big event, right? So
yeah, I mean, there's a checklist at the end of the, because we had Fantastic Four, Amazing Spider-Man, New Avengers: Illuminati, and then a first shot. What is it? I don't know what the name of it was, but there's also a thing that's not a comic. It's just like the teaser book to Civil War with like the. A recap of the setup and then like giving the pitches for some of the tie-in like
the one shot or what's it called, opening shots.
Yeah, that's
the one. Yeah, I was really confused. I was like, Marvel Unlimited only has the sketchbook of this issue or something.
Yeah, so
I kept looking for it and I was like, what? Because Dave wouldn't include, I think it probably just got, what, you know, Dave wrote these lists forever ago, and I assume that was kind of an accidental oversight that was left in. The like,
I mean, it was interesting just to see like the big list at the end of all the issues that are in it, because it's holy hell, it's huge and it's bigger than any event we've seen so far as like issues impacted. Except maybe Secret Wars 2, but that doesn't count.
So jumping into the main event here, well, actually no, I have one more complaint about Marvel Unlimited, which I usually don't have any issues with. I think Marvel Unlimited is pretty good most of the time. Didn't have the first book that we read here, Amazing Spider-Man 529, didn't have the credits for the creative team in the book.
Right. Their names, yeah.
Their names were not listed on the cover, and their names were not listed within the book itself. And then I was like, well, maybe in the metadata on Marvel Unlimited, and it said that Stan Lee wrote it. I was like, okay, that can't just be true. I looked it up. It's
full lie.
Yeah. It was J. Michael Straczynski. Yeah, who wrote like half this that we're gonna read today? He wrote the Fantastic Four. He wrote the Spider-Man.
And wrote then everything except for Bendis doing New Avengers.
Illuminati. Yeah, and you know what? I'm gonna bag on JMS a lot this episode.
Yeah,
I did a lot of stupid stuff.
Bendis' stuff is way more interesting, I feel like, in this.
I liked a lot of that JMS Spider-Man. And you know what? I like a lot of, here. I feel like I have these, I wouldn't quite call them, like, meta critiques, but they are somewhat, like, academic critiques. They're a little distanced from the, like, action of the book, because I generally like the setup, and I'm interested in where this goes, but I also, like, I have a lot of problems with just the questions that it brings up, but I also have a lot of problems with JMS's writing here. He does a lot of weird stuff. Yeah, I'll get into that later because it's silly. But the Spider-Man issues we read, 3 issues, 529 to 531, are Peter Parker becomes the administrative assistant for Tony Stark, which is strange. Their, you know, their relationship is building because I guess they're friends through work, like Avengers.
Yeah,
I'm assuming. Maybe it's the new Avengers because Spider-Man's in that, and is Iron Man in that now at this point? But yeah, anyway.
Yeah. That's. I feel like their relationship starts with like them having a relationship and being in a book together is Bendis' New Avengers, where they're both on a team. It's a team led by Cap and Iron Man, and Spider-Man is on it like as a main member for the first time of the Avengers. So their relationship starts with that.
And Spider-Man is here to accompany Tony Stark to Washington because there is a new proposed bill, the Superhero Registration Act, in which all superheroes and superpowered individuals need to register their names and addresses and powers with the government. And that's like the crux of this entire thing. And Spider-Man is recruited to just visit during like a congressional hearing as Peter Parker, but he's just as like Tony Stark's bag boy here. It's It's really strange. It kind of reverts Peter Parker back into like being a starry-eyed high schooler.
I mean, it like, feels weirdly like
a man with it feels a job like it's and a wife and...
it feels like putting it like forcing it back into like MCU synergy, except it's 10 years before Spider-Man is in the MCU. It's 1 year before the MCU is even created. Mm-hmm. But like put it feels like, yeah, we have to de-age Spider-Man so he feels like a protege of Tony Stark. It's like, this is like a, I don't know, a 38-year-old man and a...
He's not 38. Okay, come on.
No, like Tony Stark is like, what, late 30s?
And yeah, Tony Stark.
Peter is like late 20s.
But he comes across as like being 18 here. Like he's a freshman in college. Yeah. And he's just like, boy, Mr. Stark, being in front of Congress sure is intimidating, huh?
He feels like and ultimate like, Spider-Man.
Yeah, and then like he stands up and gives a very like passionate speech, you know, driven by his like... naive but well-meaning ideology, and you know Congress is way too cynical for this kid's, you know, G-shucks attitude. It's kind of, I don't know, it's fine. I actually, you know, I like the relationship between the two of them. Like, it's fun to see that. I just didn't have the thought that it kind of made Spider-Man seem like much younger than he is. These three issues mainly are Tony Stark arguing, it's unclear to me, behind the scenes he's arguing that everyone should get in line with the Superhero Registration Act. In front of Congress, he seems to be arguing against it, right? To the point where he sets up a like fake attack on himself in front of Congress. Like he hires a titanium man to attack him so that Spider-Man can defend him, so that he can use it as evidence that like superheroes are good and worthwhile. Guess maybe now that I think of it, can you square those two things?
So my thought was, I guess Bendis and Straczynski were just not doing the same thing with the character. Like there was maybe something unclear, like miscommunicated at Marvel of like, what's actually Tony Stark's deal with this new bill? Or like the credit I could give, like the most credit I could give them is, or benefit of the doubt, I guess, is did Tony pay? Like, cause it's revealed that Titanium Man, who attacks Congress, was actually paid by Tony to do it. Mm-hmm. And just is fun. Tony I like that. Doing that to prove that superheroes are useful, or to prove that they're crazy and they need like a more rigid structure to put that in check, because Spider-Man doesn't even manage to capture him by the end. But I feel like that's giving them a lot of credit, and that's not necessarily on the page.
I think the most
but it's
I
not
could credit,
clear on the page.
Yeah, the most I could credit it is maybe that Tony Stark wants to like, he sees it coming, he thinks that it's inevitable, so he might as well, like, try to get the best deal he can, more or less, right? Like, make sure that, like, when it's enacted in the most, like, generous terms for superheroes as possible, right? So he's trying to, like, soften the blow. But it doesn't really come across that clearly that that's what's up.
Yeah, I feel like it's very much two different versions of the character in this and in Bendis's Illuminati, which it feels like... From what I remember from Civil War, it feels like the version that's going to be leading Civil War is going to be the Bendis version more than the Straczynski one.
I like that. I do like him paying off a villain to attack and not cluing in either the villain that Spider-Man will be there or Spider-Man, obviously, about it, because he knows. So I kind of appreciate them leaning into like Tony Stark being a little more... like ruthless, a little more like means the ends justify the means here.
Yeah,
like, you know, putting some people in danger. I'm just kind of gonna talk generally about like the other two comics we covered, and then we can kind of get into the core idea. I think, and it'll be a good way to do it. Fantastic Four 536 to 537 is only mildly related. Actually, it's more a Doctor Doom, Thor's hammer issues. So like, when Asgard died, it passed through hell, including Thor's hammer. I think that's the... It was a little unclear to me.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten that, like, there hasn't been a Thor comic since December,
I think. Yeah, that's nuts. I did know they stuck with that. Like, I knew that they, you know, ended Thor and Asgard at the time. And I knew it didn't go for a while, but it is kind of interesting to see them commit to just be like, no, Thor's gone for like years right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat, actually. I wish they do this more often, honestly. Like, I think taking heroes off the board for a while, I think would reduce like a lot of the fatigue and make it more exciting when like someone had a really good idea for a run instead of just like, yeah, we always have a, you know, like, I guess Spider-Man. We always have a Spider-Man comic running, whether or not there's something like exciting to do with the character.
Yeah,
I mean, that's, you know, that's Marvel in general. Like, I think they should cut down to like 12 issues a month, period. But anyway, I guess as Asgard dies and passes through hell, sorry if I'm missing like details, it like allowed Doctor Doom to kind of grab on and like pull himself out of hell using the energy of Asgard, and then escape hell. And then for some reason he thinks that he now can pick up the hammer. I felt confused. Did you get this? Like, did you understand?
I mean, once again, most generous feeling I can give is that like Doom is so self-centered and egotistical that he feels like, well, of course I'm the most worthy in the world, so of course I could pick up Mjolnir, but doesn't feel that focused on that like character analysis. I think that's what's going on here, but I don't think it's particularly, it doesn't feel enough in focus. Like Doom, actual Doom doesn't even show up until like half of these issues. Mm-hmm. Second issue, I can't remember that point, what point exactly, but it starts off with just like an army of Doombats. And then we get the backstory of him climbing out of hell.
I think it's that he like feels that he felt the power of Thor pass through him or something. So he's like, oh, well, I'll have Thor's ability to pick up the hammer. But then when he touches the hammer blows a little bit and like explodes. And then Doom's like, oh, okay, I was wrong. And he leaves it there, and it's just kind of setting up, like, it's like two issues to, I guess it's basically to say, Doom's out of hell, and the hammer is now sitting in the middle of Oklahoma, which is a little MCU thing. I was like, oh, they clearly just read these issues, and were like, let's do that with Thor's hammer. Let's, like, take this image of it sitting in the middle of the desert and, like, introduce it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I don't actually know how this ties in with Civil War, except for maybe those...
I have an idea from what I remember from Civil War, but I'm not quite sure. It doesn't feel like it needs two issues to be set up.
And then at the end, we get a little wink that somebody with initials DB, Donald Blake, is like getting on a bus in Oklahoma. So hinting at the return of Thor. Here's a huge pet peeve of mine. This is going to be boring for a minute, but comic book writers who fill the page with unnecessary, like, it's hard to describe when and where it happens, but it's like, I complain about this all the time with like sci-fi stuff. Like we just read like Annihilation had a bunch of this, but it's not exclusive to that by any means. Like that wasn't even the worst offender. It's filling in like exposition, but it's not even exposition. It's like the idea might just be to like set up some flavor for the moment with some text. Or something, like, it's hard for me to wrap my head around what it's attempting to do. But, okay, this is two pages of the opening of Fantastic Four 536. 6 months ago, the Southeast Trail was first detected at 5:07 a.m. by six of the 47 unmanned radar sites that comprise the North Warning System, which provides early warning surveillance of objects entering North American airspace. Afterwards, astronomers at the Kitt Peak Observatory in Tucson confirmed that there were no identified comets or incoming meteors that could have been responsible for the sighting. I'm going to stop there. That was really boring to myself. That is half of one page. It goes like that for three times longer across two pages. And, like, not one sentence gives you any information except, like, yeah, something's falling out of space and it's going to hit the Earth, which you can just see. You're looking at with your eyes. Like you're looking at a comet.
Yeah, the image would speak, because now because you're reading the meaningless text, you're not paying enough attention to the image. It could just like fully carry the meaning on its own. I don't care that it was 6 months ago. I don't care that there was Southeast Trail. I don't care that the Europeans. Who cares?
It's crazy. It's like
so boring.
The amount of non, like just I feel like I was having like an existential crisis looking at this and being like, what could like a human have been thinking, being like, I have to write, you know, what happened afterwards to the plane and its passengers. I guess it does mention like it passed by some planes and something.
I mean, it literally ends with what matters for now is that at 5:37 a.m. an object fell from the heavens and came to Earth, and that should be the only words that I hear. Something fell to Earth. Yeah.
I'm just like, I spent like a while like trying to put myself in the headspace of like, all right, I'm writing a comic issue. Like, I just gotta, you know, describe this opening scene and like unidentified object. Satellites didn't know what it was. It was small, but not too small. It didn't burn up in the atmosphere. Like, yeah, it made me like upset JMS because he's generally pretty good. And this is just that kind of like, yeah, waffling around, wasting your time as a reader.
Yeah.
That I guess maybe, I'm sure a lot of people are rolling their eyes at this, but that's kind of what I like react to, is that like, I feel like sometimes I'm saying like, yeah, look how much all this is useless, like totally ignorable. It's not fun to read. It doesn't add to your knowledge of the information. And I get a lot of shrugs. But, like, to me, I'm just, like, it's such an, like, it's, like, epidemic in, like, superhero comics that, like, editors have not been, like, hacking this stuff out and just being, like, yeah, just get rid of all that. You don't need any of that with the art. And I just think we all need to demand a little bit better for comic artists. I think we should cancel JMS over this, is what I'm getting at.
That makes sense.
There's two other things he does that kill me. I'm just going to get them out of the way.
Yeah,
because otherwise, you know what? The actual story beats.
There's one I think I know.
Okay, yeah. Well, you guess. I want to hear if you're right.
The editor's notes of, like, the civil war between editor's notes of, like, we've been over this. And, like, in the meantime, like, the image is actually showing, like, what Peter is doing. But, like, that has... What Peter is doing on the panels has nothing to do with what's going on with the caption boxes of like the editor's notes boxes.
Yeah, it's the editor's notes arguing about like Tony Stark saying like, you know, we want to comply, but you have to meet us halfway with Congress, and you know, or more drastic steps will be taken, right? Like, or more dangerous consequences or something like that. And then the next panel is like an editor being like, not all Marvel editors agree with this, and then another editor popping in to disagree with that, and then back and forth for the whole page. You know, I didn't like it.
It goes way too long.
I mean, that's kind of the joke, is that it goes way longer than you think it would, and it turns into a whole conversation. I don't know. I didn't mind it, honestly. Actually, this is not one. This was not good. It wasn't funny. I think it was a whiff trying to make a funny conversation.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And it felt out of place with this comic, which otherwise is, like, not that goofy. You know, it felt like it was trying to fit into a sillier comic. No, the couple things that... There's like three things. Benjamin Grimm saying, as the kids say, let's get this party started. Which that was really funny. I couldn't tell if that was a reference to like the 1999 Korn song, which I doubt. But it probably was referenced to like the 2002 Pink song, Get This Party Started. Which is just funny because it's like 4 years out of date, him referencing like a very popular pop song. He's like 50 at this point, JMS. And it couldn't sound more like an old man referencing like the kids' music. He literally makes it look, as the kids say, let's get this starty parted. This which starty parted. Like,
which could be work. Which could work for Ben Grimm. Yeah. Like him being old man yelling at clouds. Like that's very... That's
but why would he say that to a bunch of Doombots?
Yeah, no, so, I agree. Yeah. The context of it doesn't work.
Yeah, I like anytime these, it's incredible how much these like Marvel writers, because it is such like a monoculture of like older, like middle-aged, like pretty boring white guys at Marvel for so long that like you get this tone of like referencing pop music, but like with somewhat of a like wink or a cynical like, you know, grin or sneer or something. Just imagining, like, 2024, like, Reed Richards being like, you know, as the teens say, I'm going to swipe my nose like a credit card. I kept imagining, like, modern-day versions of this. That bugged me. Spider-Man at the end, when he is committing himself to Tony Stark. Tony Stark is, like, making him, you know, like, sign us an oath of secrecy that, you know, to help him with his quest or whatever to go to Congress. And Spider-Man's like, a long time ago, I vowed to my uncle, you know, great power comes with great responsibility. I will be a hero and I'll be selfless and I'll help those who can't help themselves and I'll fight to the death. No quarter will be given. And I was like, he said no quarter will be given. And I was like, maybe JMS doesn't know what that means. Like, 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 you'll show no mercy to your enemies. Isn't that kind of like the opposite of what you should be doing? It kind of feels like he's just quoting X-Men, but without actually thinking about what that phrase says. No, the thing that, like, killed me most of all here is JMS clearly is, like, a Constitution fetishist and, like, a Founding Fathers.
Oh, he's, like, yeah, so, he's so horny bad.
For the Founding Fathers.
Insanely bad.
Peter's in the middle of a fight for his life with this huge titanium man, and he gets chucked over by the Lincoln Memorial, and he lands there, and he, like, stops, and he, like, he gets stunlocked by the Gettysburg Address, basically. In the middle of a fight, he's like, oh my god, the power of Lincoln. Like, he literally, like, stops to read the Gettysburg Address in the middle of this fight and goes, like, damn, that guy was a good writer, before the fight goes on. It's so corny. It's really, really funny.
Yeah.
There's a ton of that, like,
yay America without anything, like, it's so strange. Especially, well, it's in a lot the context of, yay, of the comic.
Sorry, go on, please.
Especially in the context of the comic, where it's like actively fighting against a government bill.
Well, no, that's, like, the whole thing is he's yay American ideals that, you know, don't ever and have never really existed. But he's very, like, he's Constitution pilled, right? He's a, but
yeah, because in the same issue, there's, like, Tony Stark has his whole speech about being, like, essentially, like, I'm like Lincoln, and, like, I know there's a war coming, and I have to, like, embrace that because it's a cause worth fighting for.
Yeah.
And reading that, I was like, oh, you're supposed to sound like a dumbass saying that. Like, that's stupid what you're saying. And I don't think that's actually what the comic is doing. I think the comic is being like, yeah.
I don't want to come across as, like, so cynical that I'm like, I can't, you know, like, have some kind of appreciate. It's not like I'm like, yeah, Abe Lincoln, screw that guy, he was just a big dummy. Like, no, there's definitely, like, things to value and respect about, like, some of the early American presidents and stuff. But, like, this all has this, like, very, kind of like a very naive, idealized tone of, like, you know, if only we could return to the glory days where, like, good men struggled against, aggressive. And it's very, like, taking history and turning it into, like, mythology and, like, removing all the messy bits. So, it's just something I, like, recognize from, like, grandparents, you know, this, like, this reverence for, being, you know, like, the original, I'm original constitutional Congress cell, kind of vibe to it. So, okay. We should get into the main crux of the Civil War stuff. Please go on.
I mean, I'm glad that we separated these, because I think whatever our opinions will be of the actual event of Civil War, I think it's interesting to discuss it as, like, with those row two issues, as, like, Civil War in the context of Marvel Comics being a very different event than we've seen. In the way it's teased, I think, as, like, this is going to be huge, and this is going to be a shakeup of the status quo unlike we've seen so far, and I think that is sold pretty well throughout those issues. The feeling that a tide is turning. And I think that's, like, knowing that Marvel, like, kept going, is still going, like, 20 years afterwards, and it's still going in a way that's, like, if Civil War hadn't happened, it would probably be the same. Like, I don't think any other previous Marvel events have been, like, teased in that way. Like, even Avengers Disassembled was like, no, Disassembled is going on in other series, but it's not, like, a huge teased thing. This feels like, oh yeah,
all those were teases in that, like, something's happening behind the scenes, and we won't know what it is until it happens.
Yeah, this is right.
Like, we know the stakes, and the stakes are being set up. Like, and we understand, like, we're seeing the pieces being put into place for, like, a very specific fight to come, you know? And you can kind of make some predictions about, like, where it's going to go, right? I mean, which is probably the fun of it. Or the fun at the time to watch it. Okay, so the Illuminati issue, we didn't talk about this. Brian Michael Bendis writes this Illuminati issue. It's a bunch of different moments in time over the past, like, year or so in Marvel. And it's, let me see, Black Bolt, Mr. Fantastic, Namor, Black Panther, Doctor Strange, Xavier, and Iron Man. Am I missing anyone?
Black Bolt, I think you said.
Yeah, I said Black Bolt. Yeah. Notably not Captain America, which I think is, like, fascinating. And, like, a really good and interesting choice that they would be like, yeah, Captain America kind of seems like he would be have a seat at this table, but he's not because he's too much of a, like, idealist, and this wants to be, like, a pragmatic group, right, that makes tough choices. And Captain America, I feel like the unsaid part of him not being there is that Captain America, like, wouldn't make the hard choice. He would, you know, like, buck at, you know, doing anything that would be, you know, like, harming some smaller subset of people for the larger good or something like that, right? Or, like, stepping on small rights to
like
try to
Cap
protect.
Wouldn't have sent Hulk to another planet, for example.
Sure. Or, you know, certainly not, like, set up a false flag attack by Titanium Man to, you know, prove something to Congress. Yeah, the Hulk thing is great. It's interesting reading that after Hulk. I kind of liked it more after the fact. I thought it was kind of fun seeing the, like, discussion around the Hulk, seeing this group come together and then seeing that play out, them deciding to send Hulk away. But, like, we already know what had happened, but, like, then getting the behind the scenes, it's something we just don't get in Marvel that often, this, like, flashback to stuff.
Giving flashing back and giving additional meaning to very recent continuity and feeling like it keeps building up. Like, Civil War is building not only on Avengers Assemble, New Avengers, House of M, but also on Planet Hulk and what's going on that side of things. Because I'm sure, like, when those early issues of Planet Hulk were written, they didn't think about, like, maybe they did, I don't know, but, like, it doesn't feel like they had Civil War coming in mind. And just being like, oh yeah, that makes sense for what we're doing into with Civil War, so let's add that in there as, like, a crucial point and, like, an argument on the part of Congress. That's really smart, and I think I really, really like that. I really like that as far as, like, using continuity in smart ways, including very recent continuity, making things feel like they matter. I feel like that's when the Marvel Universe as, like, a universe of different series works the best, a shared universe.
Yeah, and, like, this group is really interesting. Like, it feels like a, I don't know if it is just a Bendis, like, creation, because this is all, we haven't talked about it, but Mark Miller is the Civil War guy, and he's not anywhere to be seen here, which is kind of interesting.
It feels very much a part of what Bendis is building with his Avengers, House of M, disassembled stuff.
Yeah, totally. it seems like a Bendis swing, the Illuminati thing. I think it's just, it's really interesting seeing these here, because it just gives, like, a moral gray area to these characters. Which, you know, is something I actually kind of want to talk about with all this. I just appreciate when, like, Marvel can get, like, some of the characters I like as being, like, staunchly, like, staunch ideologues who seem almost naive in their, you know, like Spider-Man and Captain America work for me as, like, they're never going to bend on their ideals. You know, and sometimes that puts them up against other heroes, like we're probably going to see. And sometimes that makes us feel like they're wrong, you know, and sometimes, like, even the comics can frame them as being, like, a little too stiff. But I like this group coming together as a group of people who, like, wouldn't flinch quite so much at, like, kind of making some of these more, like, morally dubious choices. Okay, so the entire idea of the Superhero Registration Act, there's a lot of discussion here. I am on board with Civil War as an event because the drama that it's setting up is going to be, it sounds really compelling to me. So I'm excited to see where this goes. And I generally liked the actual, like, plot and drama between the characters that we saw in these comics and that I'm anticipating seeing in Civil War, which I have not read. The problem for me is that it raises a ton of questions that I think Marvel is not equipped to answer, that the Marvel Universe is not equipped to answer. I feel kind of like I'm treading a little bit on the territory of, you know, like, if you read a Stan Lee Spider-Man comic and you go like these kind of meta complaints that, like, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, like someone who would look at, you know, like superhero comics and be like, well, all these people are deranged, right? You'd have to be mentally insane to do this. You know, like, there's clearly something like psychotic about anyone who puts on, you know, a superhero costume and fights criminals, or complaining that, like we've had the complaint sometimes that, you know, like, Marvel as a whole is very carceral state, you know, focused, right? Like, yeah. Most of their solutions are prison and police. I think that is definitely, like, it's a decent point to make, and there are sometimes where it crosses that line where it, like, really makes me uncomfortable because the comic starts, like, wading into that conversation. But for the most part, it is just a little bit of, like, you know what, like, it's just built into the fabric of what superheroes are, and you do have to just somewhat accept the basic framework of what the Marvel Universe is to be on board with of asking questions outside of the scope of what this is and trying to bring, like, too much real world to it, I think is not, like, it can be kind of interesting, but sometimes it feels nitpicky. This specifically asks you to, like, bring up a bunch of those questions. So, like, it starts asking you, like, you know, what happens one day when a superhero messes up and accidentally kills someone? And I'm like, well, that's insane. Don't make me think about that, because we've seen it happen, right? Like, Scarlet Witch just went nuts and killed a bunch of people. But then, like, the idea that, like it's laughable that with all the scraps that they've been in, that none of these guys have accidentally killed someone. Even in these issues, Amazing Spider-Man, he has the new little spider suit with the stabby arms on his back, and he stabs through Titanium Man's helmet, and it, like, punches through his helmet. Like, did he just stab that guy in the face? Like, all the times that, it makes me then be like, well, that's stupid. You can't... you're drawing attention to one of the, like, illusions of the Marvel Universe, that somehow Captain America has never caused a brain bleed with his his shield and killed somebody, like some random street criminal. That Logan has never, you know, someone's bled out. I mean, maybe Logan. But then, like, it also starts, it just starts, like, broach, like, Tony Stark specifically brings that up. He starts specifically bringing up, like, the usefulness of heroes, and that they are there to stop you know, criminality and supervillains, and, like, that they shouldn't be regulated like the police, which is, yeah, whatever, or doctors or other governmental, like, regulations, because they don't, you know, want to be bound by the same biases and agendas of the politicians, which I get, like, that kind of makes sense. But then at the same time, the idea that none of the superheroes have any unconscious biases or conscious biases, that you never have a superhero who, like, yeah, why does he always hang out in the black areas of the city, right? Like, why is he always targeting, like, crack cocaine more than, you know, like, that they don't have the same biases that the police do. Okay, sorry,
asking
please.
Asking the questions in the context of the comic and having the characters ask those questions when they've never really asked them before in, like, what is 40 years of existence, more than 40 years, 45, feels like it's going in the country of, I mean, in the country of, in the realm of superhero subversion. It feels like we're going to The Boys, right? Or, like, every comic with superheroes, talking about superheroes as a metaphor in the context of the comic and the political and social implications of that, which I think can be done.
Right, yes. Like, but in another universe.
It's tough to do it in the context of Marvel Comics. I feel like, I don't necessarily agree with you. You said that, like, it's to some point you have to buy into that, like, you just have to, like, accept that it's a part of the Marvel Universe. with stuff like incarceration and that those being part of how Spiro's work here. I don't necessarily agree with that, like, you just have to accept that that's the way it works. But I think that the way to do it is to just start doing the alternative without... I think, like, something Al Ewing, for example, does... I don't even have a specific example, but with social issues of looking at the past of Malcolm X and being like, ooh, that's... Maybe we should do stuff different. It's just, well, now we do it different.
Oh, yeah. Like, I can see, like, a Spider-Man comic where he's doing, like... I mean, even Invincible does some of this, right? Like, we talked about Invincible, where he tries to use, like, rehabilitation rather than just putting villains in jail and, like, trying to find some use for them.
But in a way of, like, because Marvel canon is, like... Because Marvel Universe is so huge and Marvel canon is such a kind of fluid thing, we could just be like, oh, no, they actually... I know we've seen them do, like, put their villains in jail and never going back to them for, like, the past 30 years. We can just say that never happened, and I think that's fine. Not necessarily
this is also
rule,
not
for
like,
example, every character.
But, yeah.
But I feel like we there are a lot of issues and examples, like instances of that, where we can just be like, yeah, that we like that was in this comics because it was kind of another time and we didn't think about that. We don't want to play with that and having that. We don't want to have that be a part of our characters now because that doesn't make sense with the like ethics.
Well, that's not really what this is doing, though. That's also the point. Is this is not like trying to address any of that or like move on or something. It is, it's just bringing that up as like incidental to the argument of why they need to be registered, right? It's not because no, totally, like a Tony Stark who starts to try to break down the carceral system with his money is fine. I don't think that needs to like clash with the past, or a Spider-Man who starts to like do community building rather than going straight to jail. Like, I'm not saying that it's, like, so baked in that you can't get rid of it, but I'm saying, like, yeah, it just starts... And it is superhero comics besides Marvel could address this. I just think, like, if you're starting to make me question this stuff, you like, you're throwing it up as if, like, these are not already really integrated into Marvel. It just starts, like, poking holes through the... What's it called? The Magic Circle, you know that? Like, in video games, right? It's the... I think it's also in... other things, but it's like the idea of like when you're in the magic circle, like you just buy that the world that you're seeing, right? Like you're on the inside, like you are not questioning the very conceit of what you're seeing, right? Of like, oh well, this is just a game and I'm seeing the like the ones and zeros behind the rules that govern everything. Like you just kind of buy into it. Is the same with Marvel, like you do have to kind of shut off some critiques, not even critiques, like just like there's a certain reality to how these universes work, and this just made me start like thinking about too many of the flaws in that. Like one of the big things is like, so why don't most of the superheroes just go like, all right, well, if I'm gonna be targeted by the government, then I'd rather not, I'll just stop. Like it isn't it makes it sound like every superhero is going to be like hunted down, instead of just like that they'll halt. Like superheroing is so important to all these people, it's so integral to them that they'd rather fight the government than stop, just be like, all right,
but
well,
that's a confusing point, because I think but like that's the thing where I'm clear on what the bill actually does, because the way I read it was like, if you have superpowers and you get registered, you have to join SHIELD's task force. Like, it's not a choice. That's the way I read it.
I mean, with mutants, that would have been the, like, you know, the tricky part, because it's, like, all mutants.
Because they
have
still have
registered
their powers, whether they... Like, if it's someone like Tony Stark, you can just say, well, don't build armors anymore, and if we catch you in an armor, like, that's breaking the law. With mutants, or with any kind of mutate character that has, like, just innate powers... You can't take it away from them, and there isn't any... At least, I don't remember if that's a thing in Civil War, but there isn't anything of, like, power, superpower cure going on here.
Yeah, that would have been...
Like that might be...
Nice to...
Where it's going.
Make
yeah,
it a little
it's
thornier.
Not reset.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, that's mainly my issue, is that, like, it just keeps having... it's both in the Illuminati issues and in the Congress issues. It just kept bringing up stuff where I'm like, you're puncturing your own conceit. here, I think, by kind of propping up superheroes as being left better unregulated, and then comparing them to real life government agents that have problems despite being regulated, like bringing up the comparisons to the police, like I don't think helps like the Marvel superheroes. It just makes me start thinking about like, oh, like are they better unregulated? Like, is it better to not have oversight?
Like, it is very binary in a way of like, there isn't any, no other alternatives are explored. There isn't any kind of like, mm-hmm. well, maybe we should change the relationship that the government has with superheroes in some mm-hmm. other way of like, less individual, not the list, like other ways than just a straight up registration with a list of secret identities and registering. Like, no character is making the argument for any kind of middle ground between like total chaos and non-registration and full like dictatorial registration, which feels like very like, oh yeah, that's not the story you're trying to tell, but then you're trying to make this a fuller and more realistic world. It feels like that's mm-hmm. that's like a thing that's going on here. It's like, oh, realistically something like this would happen. But if you're trying to do that, then you should go all the way of like, well, realistically, these we're talking about like thousands or millions of different people who would have like a huge huge difference in opinions and not be straight along like one line or the other. There would be many divergences in opinions inside those two camps on like the details of what should be done. And it doesn't feel like that's... It feels very much like the characters on one side have the same opinion and the characters on the other side have an opposite opinion, and maybe some characters will jump from one side or the other, but it does feel like there's any nuance to questioning some elements but not others.
Which is disappointing. I mean, I also think that's a symptom of... And, you know, we'll see if the main event does better with this, but it's a symptom of the, like, the actual specifics of what's being talked about not being laid out too clearly, right? Or even if they are vague, that the players involved are talking about what they see as the real threat. So even if the government isn't saying every single superhero needs to become a soldier for us, like a secret agent, if it seems like someone could just hang up their cape and walk away, you know, if someone is arguing like, do you think they're really going to let that happen, or everyone's going to be recruited into this system, like that would be a discussion about it. It just feels like it doesn't touch on those issues that much.
Yeah.
So compared to the movie, which I actually was thinking about a bunch while reading this, and the movie kind of nails this by one making it about like a core group of, it's about the Avengers in that case, I think specifically, right? And it's like the Avengers based on a pretty specific incident. It's like about 10 guys and they're conversation around this, and then also introduces like the emotional stuff between like Captain America has an emotional argument for this, as well as like, you know, an ideological argument. He also is like emotionally evolved because of Bucky, and then Tony Stark is pretty like cold and pragmatic until he also has an emotional argument or an emotional stake in it at the end of that movie. I think by like somewhat limiting the scope of this, it worked a lot better, even though like I think it's pretty hard to watch that movie. You know, it's funny, all the marketing of that movie is like, what side are you on? And it's like, well, anyone who walks out of that movie being like, I'm on Captain America's side, it's like, well, that's wrong. Clearly, like, Tony Stark is correct here. Because they're all like art.
That's a bold take.
You think so? I didn't think so. I thought it was pretty, like, the specific circumstances of that movie, it felt very like, yeah, Tony Stark's right, they should just be regulated, right? Like, and then Captain America's like, well, what if I get sent somewhere I don't want to go? And then it's like, well, you don't go, you quit. Like, and that's always on the table in that circumstance. Like, you don't have to join the Avengers, but if you want to be part of the Avengers, you're going to be...
Yeah, but quitting means not superheroing anymore.
Well, yeah, but that's stupid. Like, if you're like, I want to keep doing this, but I want no oversight. It's like, all right, well, you can just quit. Like, which is another thing that, like, this comic kind of makes me think of, like, so why won't these people quit? Like, if you really are opposed to working for S.H.I.E.L.D. or having some kind of oversight, like, well, just, you know.
Yeah, but, like, that's go to a just day job. Giving into, well, okay, I'm okay with just having a government task force of hugely superpowered people that are doing things I'm not in agreement with, and having no counter force to that. Being well, like, yeah, I'm fine with real life, super right? caps. Like, yeah, I know, just, but like, it's strange yeah. to. I don't necessarily. I see what you mean, just because I feel like the core of that movie is. The core of the dilemma in that movie is more about Bucky than about the political stuff. And I think the political issues and like questioning of secret identities, just because, and secret identities aren't really a thing in the MCU. So I feel like just the political discussion was more pushed aside in the movie, and it was more about like the character conflicts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's more complicated than that, but I see what you mean. Just yeah. And it is very much simpler in the movie than it is in the comic, but it's also less messy in that way.
Yeah, I think it just, like, at least it sets the bounds of the conversation so that you at least, yeah. like, understand what we're arguing about, so that yeah. I'm not kind of being like, so what's the, you know, what are the stakes for these superheroes? Because, you know, I kept thinking, like, why don't they just quit? And then you're like, well, maybe they can't quit. And it's like, that's a good point, but no one said that yeah. in the book yeah. itself. I do want to say, like, I think, like, it's a really good plot driver, right? Like, that's because I am of two minds of, like, I think dramatically I'm involved and I'm curious, like, where this goes. I think, like, I can see the, like, split that's going to happen. I mean, Captain America is very absent from these issues, but, you know, I just know he's on the other side of this, and it's going to be very, like, him versus Tony Stark.
I never read the New Avengers Illuminati stuff in the context of Civil War. Hmm. And I never thought about Civil War as an Illuminati thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting seeing it in the context of these wise men thinking they can do better than anyone else and not telling any of their, like, teammates or family members of, like, Reed Richards not saying anything about Sue and the others about this, and like redamming them for that. I never thought about the Iron Man side of Civil War as the Illuminati side. I think it's gonna be interesting to go into Civil War with that knowledge and that, like, that background.
Well, even there, comics. Bendis makes it so, like, the first issue where he introduces the Illuminati, they're already splintering. Right, which I think is...
I mean, Namor being the only one that has yeah. any kind of, like, good sense is, like, a great idea, right? Because mm-hmm. it's both because he just doesn't want to be a team player, and also, yeah, he's right. You're being a-holes.
Doctor then, Strange,
like,
ducks out.
Going away once, one after the other. Yeah, Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange literally being like, I'm gone, lose my number, and then vanishing.
It's really funny. Consider yourself blocked.
That issue is really good. The Illuminati yeah. one, and the art by is it Alex Maleev? Is
yeah
excellent. I feel like I haven't seen him work outside of Daredevil. It was cool seeing him work on something, like, very colorful.
And it's mostly just, like, superheroes hanging around in a room just talking, yeah, yeah. which is great. And it's, I think, like, this is a case where in that comic, they do talk about, like, I mean, they do, like you said, like, kind of break the magic circle by literally discussing, like, these are superhero characters discussing what superheroes mean. Like, they have a discussion about, like, oh, we're not anti-establishment, but we're counter-establishment. That's an interesting discussion that makes sense for these characters to have. Well, maybe not these characters specifically, because they're talking about, like, establishments in the relationship to superheroes, and we have Black Panther literally says we're not anti-establishment, but we're counter-establishment. You're establishment. You're a king, my guy. you're not an American superhero. Yeah. It's weird to put that discussion in his mouth specifically.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
But yeah, I mean, it's... I haven't read the follow-up, like, because this is, like, an issue in Marvel Unlimited. It's put as issue zero in the New Avengers Illuminati series, but I think when it came out, it was, like, a one-shot that a miniseries. I don't think I've ever read the miniseries, and I don't know when we're going to read that, if we're going to read that, but I'm really curious about reading that, because I really like this concept. I think the Illuminati as an idea is a really, really good idea that pushes like just really interesting character dynamics for the Marvel Universe, especially now in the context of Civil War and then coming, yeah.
In context of like the complaints I'm having about Civil War, I think like Illuminati, because it's like I'm not opposed to reconfiguring like the stakes or the like the landscape, and I think Illuminati kind of reconfigures some of like that this, you know, Xavier is not the Xavier of 1964, right? Like same with Doctor Strange, right? But it is not directly just puncturing the like conceits of your whole universe, which is like, what like my problem with that is, you know, like I'm fine with retooling and moving on and like updating. It's just when you, like I've beaten it into the ground by now. So, so I'm looking forward to Civil War. I, you know, Miller's doing good work at this time, generally, especially in Marvel. I really like his stuff at Marvel. So, I'm looking forward to it. Actually, I don't know what he's doing with the Ultimate Comics at this time. Maybe Ultimate Comics are wonky, but
I mean, we're right around Ultimatum time, aren't we?
I don't know.
I feel like Miller might be gone. I don't remember. Yeah.
Well, I mean, his 2009 is Ultimatum. So.
Okay. Oh, no.
And that's Jeff. That's Jeff Loeb. That's not Mark Miller. Come on.
No, I know that, but I'm just being like, I don't know that he's still doing stuff for the Is Ultimates 2 done at this point? I don't remember.
I don't know. I was not really keeping track of like timelines when we were reading those.
Yeah, I mean, I remember liking Civil War just because it felt like it felt like a big thing reading it when I got into Tomoko. I feel like, oh, this is special and this is something that has repercussions. I know that it's got its reputation isn't as good now. I think I don't know what the reaction to it
was. It's still really popular. I know that.
Is it very popular, but like because in fandom, just because it's a huge story thing, it feels like critics wise, it's not as well liked as like some other events in that time.
Yeah.
I feel like my perception of what people think of it is like it's meh. It doesn't feel like as good as its aura.
I'm sure
it feels like a big blockbuster thing either way.
Yeah, maybe that's the appeal to it. I don't know who's the artist on it. Do you know?
Steve McNiven, I think.
Ah, okay.
Which I don't think we've seen so far.
We've just seen some of his stuff in the Ultimates, I think.
Yeah,
like Ultimate Secret and stuff, which was good. I remember that. So I'm looking forward to it. I know Civil War 2 is the one that people really hate, so
I mean that has not really anything to do with Civil War proper.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It's just like another conflict between superheroes on a very different topic.
That they call it. Yeah, I'll probably read some of the tie-ins. I'll try to read as many as I have a chance for, but, you know, I certainly am not going to do the full Civil War. There's just way too many.
Like, I think the Captain America tie-ins are pretty huge.
Yeah, I'll do like a Google, you know, I'll look for a Reddit thread of like what are the most essential tie-ins or something.
As always, like read the tie-ins of this series you already like.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sure. That's a good point too. Yep. All right, well thank you, Charlotte. That was good. That was a fun conversation. I appreciate it.
I do think I'm glad we separated these issues from the main serial stuff, because I think it's interesting to be able to talk about it in the context of what it means for Marvel and what it is like as a huge thing, and then in the next episode talk about like the actual Civil War issues.
Yeah, and this ends with the New Warriors did something bad and 600 people are dead, which like New Warriors getting their comeuppance for being
a bad comic.
a bunch of dumb stinker kids who suck. I hate those kids.
Hell yeah.
Charlotte agrees with that.
I mean, as far as like teenager superhero teams go, I feel like they are dead last. Like it's Young Avengers, Runaways. Who else? Like New Mutants are number one for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
New Warriors. I don't have a worse example.
Power Pack. Yeah. I mean, even Power Pack, I'd put above them.
Yeah, for sure.
They have their fans. We have you know New Warriors fans in Slack, but. I don't get it. Sorry, there's a new series in 2005. Zeb Wells did like a new series with some of them, which I think is this team that we're going to see. But
yeah,
I don't know. All right. Well, thank you all very much for listening. Appreciate you listening to the show. If you want to support us, review us on Apple Podcasts, patreon.com/mymarvelousyear, all the usual stuff. Tell a friend. Next week, we'll be doing Civil War, which is exciting. And then on to 2007, which that whole list is already written. Tons of fun stuff. Looking forward to there. And our music is by Disasterpiece, who just put out a new album. I just listened to it yesterday. Woo! So, yeah, it's kind of a chill ambient album. Maybe like if Bugs made an ambient album. that's how I'd describe it. It's pretty good. It's called...
Wait, Bugs like insects?
Yeah, it's like an ambient album. Bugs with Bunny. Like... No, it's an absolute opposite vibe.
Yeah, very different.
Yeah, it's called Stand Still, I think.
Yeah, I'll listen to that while I'm working.
Yeah, that's what I did. Listen to it while I was working. Thank you, Disasterpiece. And talk to you later. Wait, that's not how we end this. See you next year.
See you next year.
2006 pivot of talk to you later.
Changing the intro 5 years ago.